Marianne Cotton, née Robson, was an English convicted murderer who was executed for poisoning her stepson. Despite her sole conviction for murder, she is believed to have been a serial killer who killed many others, including 11 of her 13 children and 3 of her 4 husbands, for their life insurance policies. Her preferred method of killing was poisoning with arsenic. Cotton's undoing came after she tried to have the son of her deceased husband sent to a workhouse. When that failed, within days, she told the parish officials that Charles Edward Cotton had died. Investigations into her behaviour soon showed a pattern of deaths. The body of the stepson was examined and found to contain arsenic. Cotton was convicted of his murder and sentenced to death. She was hanged at Durham Jail. She did not die on the gallows from breaking off her neck, but died by strangulation because the rope was set too short, possibly deliberately. Marianne Robson was born on the 31st of October 1832 at Low Moorsley, County Durham, to Margaret Nee Lonsdale and Michael Robson, and baptised at St Mary's, West Rainton on the 11th of November. Her sister Margaret was born in 1834 but lived only a few months, and her brother Robert was born in 1835. When Marianne was 8, her parents moved the family to the County Durham village of Merton. At the time of her trial, the Northern Echo published an article containing a description of Marianne as given by her childhood Wesleyan Sunday School superintendent at Merton, describing her as a most exemplary and regular attender, a girl of innocent disposition and average intelligence, and distinguished for her particularly clean and tidy appearance. Soon after the move, Marianne's father fell 150 feet to his death down a mineshaft at Merton Colliery in February 1842. Her father's body was delivered to her mother in a sack bearing the stamp property of the South Hedden Coal Company. As the miners' cottage they inhabited was tied to Michael's job, the widow and children would have been evicted. In 1843, her mother married George Stott, also a miner. At 16, Marianne left home to become a nurse at the nearby village of South Hedden, in the home of Edward Potter, a manager at Merton Colliery. After all of the children had been sent to boarding school in Darlington, over the next 3 years, she returned to her stepfather's home and trained as a dressmaker. In 1852, 20-year-old Marianne married colliery labourer William Mowbray at Newcastle-upon-Tyne Register Office. They soon moved to southwest England. At the time of her trial, there were reports of 4 or 5 of their children dying young while they were living away from County Durham. None of these deaths are registered, as although registration was compulsory at the time, the law was not enforced until 1874. The only birth recorded was that of their daughter, Margaret Jane, born at St. Germans in 1856. William and Marianne moved back to northeast England, where William worked as a fireman aboard a steam vessel sailing out of Sunderland, then as a colliery foreman. Another daughter, Isabella, was born in 1858, and Margaret Jane died in 1860. Another daughter, also named Margaret Jane, was born in 1861, and a son, John Robert William, was born in 1863, but died the next year from gastric fever. William died of an intestinal disorder in January 1865. The lives of William and of their children were insured by the British and Prudential Insurance Office, and Marianne collected a payout of £35 on William's death, equivalent to £3,560 in 2021, about half a year's wages for a manual labourer at the time, and £2.5 for John Robert William. Soon after Mowbray's death, Marianne moved to Seaham Harbour, County Durham, where she struck up a relationship with Joseph Natras. During this time, her 3.5-year-old daughter, the second Mary Jane, died of typhus fever, leaving her with one child of up to 9 that she had born. She returned to Sunderland and took up employment at the Sunderland Infirmary, House of Recovery for the Cure of Contagious Fever, Dispensary and Humane Society. She sent her surviving child, Isabella, to live with her mother. One of her patients at the infirmary was engineer George Ward. They married at St. Peter's Church on the 28th of August 1865. Ward continued to suffer ill health and died on the 20th of October 1866 after a long illness characterised by paralysis and intestinal problems. The cause of death recorded on his death certificate is that of English cholera and typhoid. The attending doctor later gave evidence that Ward had been very ill, yet he had been surprised that his death was so sudden. Once again, Marianne collected insurance money in respect of her husband's death. James Robinson was a shipwright at Pallion in Sunderland, whose wife Hannah had recently died. He hired Marianne as a housekeeper in November 1866. A month later, when James's baby John died of gastric fever, he turned to his housekeeper for comfort, and she became pregnant. Then Marianne's mother, living in Seaham Harbour, County Durham, became ill with hepatitis, so Marianne immediately went to her. Although the mother began to recover, she also began to complain of stomach pains. She died at the age of 54 in the spring of 1867, 9 days after Marianne's arrival. In 1867, Marianne's stepfather, George Stott, married his widowed neighbour, Hannah Paley. Marianne's daughter, Isabella Mowbray, was brought back to the Robinson household and soon developed severe stomach pains and died, as did two of Robinson's children, Elizabeth and James. All three children were buried in the last week of April and the first week of May 1867. Marianne received a life insurance payment of £5, 10 shillings, 6 pence for Isabella. Robinson married Marianne on the 11th of August 1867. Their first child, Margaret Isabella, Mary Isabella on her baptismal record, was born that November, but she became ill and died in February 1868. Their second child, George, was born on the 18th of June 1869. Robinson, meanwhile, had become suspicious of his wife's insistence that he insure his life. He discovered that she had run up debts of £60 behind his back and had stolen more than £50 that she had expected to bank. Then he found that Marianne had been forcing his older children to pawn household valuables. He threw her out, retaining custody of their son George. Marianne was desperate and living on the streets until her friend Margaret Cotton introduced her to her brother Frederick, a pitman and recent widower living in Walbottle, Northumberland, who had lost 2 of his 4 children. Margaret had acted as a substitute mother for the remaining children, Frederick Jr. and Charles, but in late March 1870, she died from an undetermined stomach ailment, leaving Marianne to console the grieving Frederick Sr. Soon, her 12th pregnancy was underway. Cotton and Marianne were bigamously married on the 17th of September 1870 at St. Andrews, Newcastle upon Tyne, and their son Robert was born in early 1871. Soon after, Marianne learned that her former lover, Joseph Natras, was living 48 kilometres away in the County Durham village of West Auckland and was no longer married. She rekindled the romance and persuaded her new family to move near him. Cotton died in December of that year from gastric fever. Insurance had been affected on his life and those of his sons. After Frederick's death, Natras soon became Marianne's lodger. She gained employment as a nurse to an excise officer recovering from smallpox. Popular cultural sources have called him John Quickmanning, though there appears to be no trace of a John Quickmanning in the records of the West Auckland Brewery or the National Archives. The census records, birth, death and marriage records also show no trace of him. However, Richard Quickman, a custom and excise man specialising in breweries, has been found in the records. His may be the real name of Marianne Cotton's lover. Soon, Mary became pregnant by him with her 13th child. Frederick Jr. died in March 1872 and the infant Robert soon after. Then Natras became ill with gastric fever and died just after revising his will in Marianne's favour. The insurance policy Marianne had taken out on the still living child's life still awaited collection. Marianne's downfall came when a parish official, Thomas Riley, asked her to help him nurse a woman who was ill with smallpox. She complained that the last surviving cotton boy, Charles Edward, was in the way and asked Riley if he could be committed to the workhouse. Riley, who also served as West Auckland's assistant coroner, said that she needed to accompany him. She told Riley that the boy was sickly and added, "I won't be troubled too long. He'll go like all the rest of the cottons." 5 days later, Marianne told Riley that the boy had died. Riley went to the village police and persuaded the doctor to delay in writing a death certificate until the circumstances could be investigated. Marianne's first visit after Charles' death was not to the doctor, but the insurance office. There she discovered that no money would be paid out until a death certificate was issued. An inquest was held and the jury returned a verdict of natural causes. Marianne claimed to have used arrowroot to relieve his illness and said Riley had made accusations against her because she had rejected his advances. Then the local newspapers latched onto the story and discovered Marianne had moved around northern England and lost 3 husbands, a lover, a friend, her mother and 11 children, all of whom had died of stomach fevers. Rumour gave rise to suspicion and scientific investigation. Dr. William Byers Kilburn, who attended Charles, had kept samples and tests showing that they contained arsenic. He told the police, who arrested Marianne and procured exhumation of Charles's body. She was charged with his murder, although the trial was delayed until after the delivery in Durham Jail on 7th January 1873 of her 13th and final child, whom she named Margaret Edith Quickmanning Cotton. Cotton's trial began at Durham Assizes on 5th of March 1873. The delay was caused by a problem in the selection of prosecution counsel. A Mr. Aspinwall was first considered, but the Attorney General, Sir John Duke Coleridge, whose decision it was, chose his friend and protege, Charles Russell. Russell's appointment over Aspinwall led to a question in the House of Commons. However, it was accepted and Russell conducted the prosecution. The Cotton case was the first of several famous poisoning cases that he would be involved in during his career, including those of Adelaide Bartlett and Florence Maybrick. The defence in this case was handled by Thomas Campbell Foster, who argued during the trial that Charles had died from inhaling arsenic used as a dye in the green wallpaper of the Cotton home. The doctor testified that there was no other powder on the same shelf in the chemist's shop as the arsenic, only liquid. The chemist himself claimed that there were other powders. Campbell Foster argued that it was possible that the chemist had mistakenly used arsenic powder instead of bismuth powder, which was used to treat diarrhea, when preparing a bottle for Cotton, because he had been distracted by the talking to other people. The jury retired for 90 minutes before returning a guilty verdict. The Times correspondent reported on the 20th of March, "After conviction, the wretched woman exhibited strong emotion, but this gave place in a few hours to her habitual cold, reserved demeanour, while she harbours a strong conviction that the royal clemency will be extended towards her. She staunchly asserts her innocence of the crime that she has been convicted of." Several petitions were presented to the Home Secretary, but to no avail. Marianne Cotton was hanged at Durham County Jail on the 24th of March 1873 by William Calcraft. She died not from her neck breaking, but by strangulation caused by the rope being rigged too short, possibly deliberately. Of Marianne's 13 children, only two survived her, Margaret Edith and her son George, from her marriage to James Robinson.
If you like that, then listen to our main show every Wednesday on all good podcast providers. It's Alive Alive, the really, really fake true crime horror podcast. All the guts and gore, none of the guilt. See you on Wednesdays.